Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
TickPick should be your first choice to buy basketball tickets because they save fans money by never charging any service fees, ever. TickPick is the exclusive ticketing partner for the Laker Film Room podcast and Blue Wire Network.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day, just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And last night, the Lakers tattered and torn at 16 and 18, washed up on the shores of No Big Island. There's not a lot of firsts left in LeBron James's career, Darius, but last night was the first time that he started at the center position. Now, there's not a lot of shelter on No Big Island right now, and there's a pretty good chance that Ja and the Grizzlies rain a pretty hellacious thunderstorm on us tonight. And it's also very possible that it's just a one-night visit. I'd expect Dwight will start against Memphis, but we shall see. Anyhow, so even if it's just a one-night trip against a bad team in a mostly unserious basketball game, Lakers dropped 132 points. And Darius, this is not the first bad basketball team that we've played this season. We've played this exact team a couple of other times in several other games earlier in the year that were very frustrating that we don't need to rehash right now. They were scoring at will. There's defensive problems that we'll certainly get to, and there's so many aspects of this that it's going to take multiple pods to really address all of the different angles of it. But what did you see, man? What stood out to you about these groups?
So let's talk positives first, because we want it, the Lakers won. So I don't want to start out on like the things I didn't like.
We'll have plenty of negative. We've had plenty of negative. Yeah, let's have a fun pod for once.
I just thought that there was a level of, oh, this is something that we could get into, right? Like, I don't know. You go shopping at a brand new store and you're like, I've never been in this store. Oh, look at this. This is cool. Oh, I like this. And suddenly you've got like a cart full of stuff and you've never even seen this place or known that it existed, right? And now you've got $300 worth of stuff in your cart and you realize, oh, maybe I got to put some of this stuff back, right? Like all this stuff is cool, but I don't maybe need all of it. The Lakers, I felt like, were sort of that kid in a candy store with this sort of lineup out there, that they looked invigorated to a certain extent. They looked like this is how things are supposed to work, especially offensively. The stuff I was going to talk about that wasn't as good was the defensive stuff. But offensively, they looked like, A, Houston's bad. They can't guard us regardless, right? But B, they especially can't guard us when these are the lineups that that we're going to play. And not only that, but that this is the style and the alignment of the players, right? And so, Mike, one of the things that we talked about earlier during the season is that whether, like, Anthony Davis is a big, but the idea of Anthony Davis's center lineups are supposed to sort of look very similar to these sort of lineups, right? Like spaced, lots of room to operate. Like, we're going to play five out a lot, but the AD at the five lineups haven't really looked like that. They've been AD sort of lurking in the dunker spot more, or let's post him up. And the Lakers weren't doing a lot of that. They did it for LeBron some, But a lot of it really was five out spaced principles and the driving angles that that creates and the driving kick opportunities for more players than just LeBron and Russell Westbrook. That to me is what signaled like the sort of aha moment for the players on the court. Like, we can do something with this that hasn't really been available to them over the course of a full game the way that it was in this game, because like Pete said, none of the bigs played. And even when LeBron was out, it was just like, hey, Melo, go play center, right? They didn't even have Ariza. So it was like, okay, well, this is it. This is what it's going to be. And so the spacing and the positioning of the players on the court is what sort of signaled to me that this was going to work for them, not only against Houston, but potentially against other teams.
So my wife just brought me two pieces of bacon, and therefore I'm definitely going to start on the positive up front.
All right.
That made me happy.
The basketball gods have been giving us blessings slowly that have been hard to see, but the bacon in front of you, Stanley Johnson, it's all, you know, from the same source. Well, yes.
I was going to ask you, do you guys see how many minutes Malik Monk played last night?
40. That's a cool 40.
40.
Yeah.
He played 40 minutes. And he was great offensively.
I love him.
Offensively, he was great. 7 for 14, made three threes, and got to the free throw line 8 times. And one of the things that I noticed early in the game about Monk that I was really liking was, like, with all of the space, and especially kind of working in tandem with LeBron some, he can beat guys off the dribble so easily. And he's got both. Like, he's got the burst, he can pull up from three. So he's a guy, I think we think of the space floor as something, okay, that's going to be great for Russ specifically or LeBron specifically. But Monk, and we just got to see so much of a sample size of it, that was an interesting part of it for me. I would throw in that, kind of like I think Pete has mentioned this consistently, but, you know, maybe you put Dwight Howard in some of those second units instead of Melo, especially if you're going to drop. And I don't want to get you started, Pete, on something that bothered you all along.
The text thread last night was,
yeah, I tried to ask Melo about that after the game, but the offensive side in this whole, I'll shock you guys by saying that LeBron, of course, is the key to all this. And just, I'm having some visions of the next couple of years with LeBron in this kind of alignment. And of course, Anthony Davis is so key to it all, to actually be a good defensive team with it. But yeah, those are just some of my initial observations, Pete.
Yeah, the Monk point's a really good one, and I think projects well for Kendrick Nunn. And let's zoom out for a second to just the overall idea of the team. When I saw the roster, and that's why I've been so adamant that we were going to end up at this place, is, like everyone else, I was like, what the hell are we doing? Like, what is this? And the first instinct is to look at this and go, this is never going to work. And there's a chance that that's true. But I think that there's some benefit of the doubt owed to people who just won a championship all around, right? And that have, in some cases, won multiple championships, to at least, like, be curious, like, okay, what are they going for? And there's a style of play that, and this, I've been, again, ranting about this, that, and it's, I call it, you know, I think of it as LA style basketball. And that's part of what's so, again, basketball gods blessing us, is if this team can play this style of play with this many guys from LA, like, this is a local style of play that is, that it's just part of every city, different city in the country, I think, contributes a certain flair to their hoopers. Like, THT, Nunn, and AD all have these, like, nasty off the dribble moves that very much
Derrick Rose.
Chicago hoopers, man. They've got their own style. New York hoopers have their own style. Seattle guys, right? If this goes in the right direction at some point, we're working on going in the right direction, much less getting to the end point, right? So the end point's so far away that it's not worth talking about, but if we can do this with a bunch of LA guys, that would be phenomenal. And what does that mean? That whole style is, traditionally, teams that have played small have focused on offense, on their supporting players being able to shoot. The idea being, we've got these incredible shot creators, these guys you cannot guard in space. We're going to put them in the defenses in space. They're going to win their matchup pretty much every time. It's going to collapse the defense. And when the ball gets kicked out, you want someone that's able to knock down a catch and shoot three with their feet set. And there are a bunch of guys in the league, because defensively, to play that way, you need rangy wings, right? Guys that can kind of clean up or reduce the harm of not having a true big on the floor. So the sacrifice for those players, if you can do those two things and you can handle the ball, most of the time you are a very well-paid player. So most of the role players in that type of build don't have a ton of ball handling. So they can't really attack closeouts well. So with this style of play and with this personnel, I believe the concept is rather than 3-and-D with the supporting players, it's handles and D. It's ball handling and the ability to attack in space. That play that I sent you guys earlier in the text thread when Stanley Johnson beat Sengun off of the dribble, there's going to be a lot of situations where the defense has one guy where that's just not the thing that he's best at, because there's no other team in the league that can put five guys on the floor that can handle the ball on a consistent basis. We'll get into that in a moment. Now I'm going on and on for a bit here, D, but that I think is the concept of, like, I think I disagree with the execution in a couple of different places, but in terms of like the bigger picture, like what the hell were they thinking making such radical changes? I believe that that's the concept behind it.
So let's go to break, because this is a fruitful topic to explore further.
Lakers basketball is finally back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself by searching all over the internet to find Lakers tickets anymore. Because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site, and the only one you'll ever need as your go-to for all NBA tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that other ticket sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all their NBA tickets. Don't believe it? If you can find better prices on the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in purchase price. I'm excited to see this Lakers squad get out in transition this year, and there's nothing like seeing a great fast-breaking team in person. Visit tickpick.com/LFR today and use promo code LFR to save $10 on your first order of Lakers tickets.
Are you looking for ways to skip the trip to the post office and dodge all that hectic holiday shopping traffic? Why not save time and money with Stamps.com? Stamps.com lets you compare rates, print labels, and access exclusive discounts on UPS and USPS services all year long. It just makes sense, especially if your business sends more mail and packages during the holidays. Whether you're selling online or running an office or side hustle, Stamps.com can save you so much time, money, and stress during the holidays. Access all the post office and UPS shipping services you need without taking the trip, and get discounts you can't find anywhere else, like up to 40% off USPS rates and 76% off UPS. Save time and money this holiday season with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code FILMROOM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter the code FILMROOM.
So, Pete, it's super interesting to me, this idea that you've brought to the fold and sort of the ethos of the team, right? The undercurrent of what is going to drag this team in the direction that they're most suited to play, and the idea of shot creation or the ability to attack. Because there's always a certain balance that I think lineups need to have. If you have five attack players, that's great, but where are the finishers? Because you do need plays to be completed by someone. I remember watching the Celtics like over the last couple of years and reveling in some of the drive and kick possessions that went nowhere, because it's just drive and kick, drive and kick, drive and kick. And it's just like, okay, well, if you're just driving and kicking and driving and kicking and there's no one there on the back end to say, no, I'm the finisher now.
Or even the ball handler being the drive and finisher. Like, if you don't step over in front of Russ, he's going to get the layup, right? And maybe he's going to miss it more often than not, but he's going to get 9 or 10 of them per game, especially if the floor is spaced.
And so let's bring it back to Monk, because I think Monk,
exactly.
This is one of the reasons why Monk is, I think, a very interesting player for this style of play, Mike, is that he is one of those guys who can be a catch and shoot player. He did that in Charlotte a bunch, and he's done it for the Lakers a bunch this year too. But if you really want Malik Monk to be out with you at 3 a.m. with his jumper, right? Because I listened to the last pod, then the idea is, some of that shot creation is going to be vital to him having more utility on the court than just a spot up shooter. And you want guys to be able to play to more of their strengths. Stanley Johnson, to me, is a guy that's in the opposite direction than Monk, because what he wants to do is attack. He is not a guy who is going to spot up. And one of the reasons why he hasn't necessarily been in the league recently is because it's what you guys talked about before with him, is that his whole life he's been an on-ball player. And
yep,
getting that out of your system and changing as a player when you've been a dude who has basically been like, give me the ball since he was probably 11, 12 years old, and now he's 25. And it's just like, well, I've been doing the same thing my whole life. You want me to be something different now?
This is what we're asking THC to do right now, by the way.
Yeah, but Stanley Johnson, he went to Arizona. He was a top 10 pick.
Blue chip guy.
There is pedigree. Like, I'm not saying that THC doesn't have that pedigree, but he went in the second round. He went to Iowa State. Mm-hmm. Like, these are not the same things. And getting back to my Johnson point, though, is that he will shoot that three. Right? Because those are technically good shots. They're in rhythm. But he needs to take those shots because that's what facilitates the flow of the offense, right?
Yeah. And so, if he hits 30% of them, like, we're going to win enough other possessions with other players. Like, that's fine. It's the point that Mike always makes. It's not Ben Simmons in the corner, right? He's going to get you almost a point per possession.
So, Mike, what I want to pose to you here is that balance within the lineups. And I think one of the most important things the Lakers need to do in zooming back out and finalizing like what this roster is going to look like is finding that right balance of how many players can we get who can check the boxes that you need in order to play this specific style. Because I'm convinced at this point that the bigs on this roster, Dwight Howard, DeAndre Jordan, their utility is going to be limited. It just is. They may play against a team like Memphis tonight because Memphis starts basically two gigantic dudes and Steven Adams will basically just look like, you know, Saturn eating his son against some of these lineups.
Yeah.
Well, and remember, he was giving it to Anthony Davis inside 2 weeks ago when the Lakers were in that building.
Well, and I'd also point out that, like, I think LeBron can win some physical battles against Adams because he has a lower center of gravity. But do you want him really doing that? I don't know. I would rather him not deal with that. But anyhow, I think it's a difference between capability versus is it a good idea tonight?
So, Mike, you've always been someone who has been sort of highlighting the idea of shooting's important, but it's not as important as these other things. And I think that this style of play that the Lakers are going to and Pete's premise of, yeah, shooting is important, but it's not the only thing because these other things are important too. How do you envision the Lakers sort of treading this line and walking this balance beam of finding the right sort of mixture within lineups? Because I honestly think that that's going to be the most important thing when you highlight Russ, AD, LeBron, and this style of play, because the guys around them is what's going to make it all work.
Well, I'm going to try to make a kind of a zoom out point here. And before we started recording, we were talking about the Philippines a little bit. And I'll let you mention what it is, but I cited this book and then Pete happened to bring it out called Pacific Rims by Rafe Bartholomew, who I went to college with. And part of like the basketball philosophy and the obsession in the Philippines. And so the way I'm going to try to connect it, thinking about, for me, the way that they're playing this offensive style and this five out and the spacing and all that, it's really pretty to watch. And there are a lot of elements of it that I think can work in a long lasting way. But there tends to be this, when you play like that, five out, there tends to be just like an attitude on defense that, you know what, we're going to score so much and so easily that, like, not going to worry as much about that side of the court. It's just and it was loose last night. We saw that. Houston was scoring whenever they wanted to. So I don't know if you can really play those lineups, especially for 48 minutes, and have a serious enough either approach or energy towards or attitude towards the defensive side of the court. And so I need some kind of balance. And I don't know if that's a personnel shift or basically just getting Frank Vogel back on the court and being able to, you know,
all of like make
those kind of adjustments. But I really enjoy watching part of it, but I'm the overall philosophical basketball thing. I think there has to be this connectivity between champions in the NBA and guys who are awesome on offense, but take defense seriously. And I don't care what the scheme is. I don't care what, like, there are different things can work. Different things have always worked, but that's to me what I'm kind of yearning for when I watch last night's game.
Who on this roster, Mike, is capable of playing that level of seriousness on the defensive end amongst the role players?
Well, so that's where I think that Reeves and Ariza, right, the two guys that weren't in the lineup yesterday because both are in health and safety protocols, that's where you start some of it. You get Anthony Davis back, of course, is the key to all of that. But that's where Avery Bradley, obviously, and we've talked about him in different contexts this year. Stanley Johnson, is he going to stick around? So there are guys.
You've named a few guys.
THT,
we're just Darren starting Collison. To get to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but maybe that issue is more like if Melo is really your backup five, like that's the thing that just absolutely mm-hmm. doesn't work, right? So
yep. if and that's AD what they attacked every play, right?
Yeah, and that's what they attacked. And then like Malik Monk actually a couple blocks, you know, mm-hmm. like got a
Monk's
deflection.
Been competing.
Monk's now, so competing like, Monk is fast. Just compete. This, but yeah. that's the point. Is what Mike's point is. You have to compete on defense. There has to be a level of seriousness. Like, well, I'm sure there was some degree, Mike, earlier in the year where I'm complaining about the defensive schemes, and you're like, you must have been like, are you watching these dudes? Like, they're not even trying. You know, like, and there's something that has to be provided before schemes and things like that come into the equation.
It's a good check though that you give, because it's not that there aren't enough guys that either historically or currently can give you that. It's just that it needs to be. That was my point with the alignment in itself and just the feeling when if you're just playing pickup and you've got the better dudes and you just know that you can score. Like, that's all. It's sometimes hard to translate the mindset overall. And I just think starting that way with LeBron at the five, there was something about that team. They had a certain cockiness offensively, which was great, but you know, they also didn't really take Houston seriously. And as much as that team isn't good, like they, you know, they do have some guys that can score, you know, so in as well,
oh, yeah, you give
do,
them clean looks, they're going to be feeling good about themselves for sure.
All during the preseason. And when this roster was put together, I was just like, well, I don't know if this team is going to guard anyone. I think that they're going to be like, they're going to look around and be like, we got five dudes going to the Hall of Fame and dudes who have averaged triple doubles and 20 points a night for their career and yada, yada, yada. Like, they're going to feel like we can score. Fact is, though, is this team hasn't scored. They've been in the 20s in offensive rating pretty much the entire season. And they have been better on defense because they've prioritized defense, right? And so I'd love to kick it to break. Because finding that idea of, okay, well, this team does need to, they do need to defend. They do need to compete on that end. But there's some strategic and stylistic shifts, I think, that need to happen defensively when you're on no big island, right?
That's right.
That this team is going to have to embrace. And Frank Vogel's going to be a big key in that, guys. So let's take a break. And then, Pete, I'd love to hear your thoughts about sort of defensive stuff.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What an unusual circumstance it is to have one head coach that you've had for a couple of years now coach most of the season, and then another head coach step in for a little bit. And I think it's been about 10 days now without Frank. And that second coach has a very different philosophy toward basketball in general. Fizdale is another LA guy. I don't think most people know that, but Fizdale's from Los Angeles. And that style of play that I've been talking about is he's almost certainly very familiar with. And he's been reported to be one of the people that facilitated the change in Miami that helped grease the wheels to go to Bosch at the five. And again, I just want to – so he's a teacher of this particular style of play. That said – you do have to play a certain level of seriousness on defense. You do have to be able to adjust and scheme in a different way than you do when that's JaVale and Anthony Davis back there. And I've missed Frank's in-game adjustments as a defensive coach. It's been, again, illuminating to lose your coach and to have a coach come in from a completely different style of play, right? Like, he comes from a different point of view basketball-wise. And I think the best version of this team is the best attributes of how Frank likes to play and the best attributes of how Fizdale likes to play. There's a certain degree of in-game decision-making that a coach has to make, that Frank being out for this period of time has made me appreciate that more.
It's highlighted. One of the things that Fizdale has commented a bunch about while Frank has been out is, like, Fizdale's basically said, Frank's made me a better coach. You know why? Because he's freaking prepared. Like, there's a level of preparedness that Vogel has as a head coach that has been great for me. Like, I'm speaking as Fizdale here, right? And he's relayed that multiple times, Mike. And that idea of being prepared allows you to then, I think, pivot in game. Frank gets lambasted for his lineup decisions, but he doesn't really seem to get enough praise for the little tactical shifts that happen over the course of a game, and the little bit of, like, yeah, guess what? We are going to go zone here. Guess what? We are going to switch here. We're going to start switching 1 through 4. Oh, we're going to start showing help with the guard when they run. Like, there's all these little tweaks that Vogel has deployed over the course of the season that, to watch some of those things just vanish when he's not been available, like on the sidelines and in the moment, has been interesting.
And just to jump in here on coaching, and I mean, talking about philosophical shifts over time in basketball, of course, for a long time, it was just former players that would sort of shift up. And sometimes in the case of Bill Russell, like, do both. And then at a certain point, though, and this has been a bit more recently, but you've had these film room guys and these guys that have been just absolutely crazy obsessed with all of the intricacies and X's and O's and just deep advanced stuff that have been spending all of their hours doing this. And the same shift has happened in the NFL, by the way. And what we've realized, I think, now is that there is so much there. There's so much meat on that bone. And I think a recent example has been Chauncey Billups going up to Portland. And even, like, when he got in the assistant chair next to Ty Lue, who made the transition but also managed to do it in an obsessed way, and was like, hold on, there's like 125 things on a list, and I'm maybe getting to 10 of them. But Spoelstra and Quinn Snyder and Frank Vogel and, a lot of these guys have all of that stuff just seeped into their beings now. And it's a lot to try and catch up to when it's being practiced around the league. That I don't think that trend is going anywhere. I think that's sort of what coaching is now in the NBA and in the NFL.
I think coaching is a couple of different things. And I think that the best version of this Lakers squad is a marriage between that level of preparedness and attention to detail on the defensive end and this style of offense.
Yeah.
We were playing pretty good defense before Frank went down. What kind of season is this? We're talking about our coach going down for a little while, right? Like our head coach being out for 2 weeks. Before Frank went down, he had miraculous. How were we 11th or 12th?
11th in defense.
And we weren't like a good, I'm not saying that, oh, that's championship level defense, but considering the available guys that we had, that's miraculous that we were 11th in defensive rating in the NBA. So to me, the marriage, the harmony, the triangle of all of this is playing the lineup concepts of Fizdale with Vogel as the coach, right? Like the defensive coach, the coordinator, the guy that gets the best out of everyone that has that attention to detail. But before even that, also playing guys that give a crap on defense. Vogel has no problem on that. And we have a couple of those guys now, man. Like even a Stanley Johnson, there's one play D where he tracked down this long rebound. You know how much we've gotten our asses kicked on long rebounds this season? And he was just, there's just a level of give a crap and athletic tools that it's not even complicated, but it's just, oh, we needed that so badly.
Johnson's been a revelation and you guys talked about this a ton, so I don't want to hit on it too much, but he's been a revelation from the idea of, oh, hey, yeah, remember that stuff? That stuff still matters. And you don't know, you try to quantify how much a team misses it, but it's hard because you just have not had it. And now that they have it, you see the difference. And it's just like, oh, damn. Yeah, I remember. I remember what it's like to get out of area rebounds from a dude who is sort of like LeBron James size in terms of height, not as thick as LeBron, but just sort of like an athlete. And that dude's just chasing down a ball and knocking a dude off of him. It's just like, yep, that's what happens when you're 6'8", 245 pounds. Like, you just move guys, right? And so he's been a revelation from that standpoint. One of the things I wanted to get to from Vogel and from an X's and O's standpoint and from a defensive give a crap idea is that to me, the idealized version of this is actually, Mike, you brought up the Houston team that the Lakers beat in the playoffs with Russell Westbrook, right? But the version of the Rockets team that the Lakers should be looking at is the one right before that. It's the Chris Paul version, right? That's the team that switched a bunch, that had dogs on defense. Trevor Ariza played on that team, right? They had PJ Tucker, they had Trevor Ariza, they had Chris Paul, they had James Harden, and they just switched everything defensively and they were attack dogs, right? They gang rebound. That's not Vogel's style of play, but Vogel could teach that stuff because he is a master in terms of defense. And while he may not say we're switching 1 through 5 every possession because he doesn't believe in that, and I don't even think that that's the most effective way to necessarily play basketball for 48 minutes.
But it's not a 48 minute solution, no, but it is a solution.
But it is a solution. And I do think that moving more in that direction is going to be important. And that's why I was talking about roster shifts and that idea of melding what the team has, do they have enough there, and targeting those guys, Pete, who can play more of that style in order to mix it up.
What have you thought of Collison, another LA guy?
So Collison to me, I've been looking more at him offensively than I have defensively. Defensively, Collison's always been a guy who's competed. He's been a guy that in the prime of his career, he was up in terms of the league of like steal leaders and has active hands and knew how to move his feet. And he was a plus level defender, even though he's not very big. Right. But he's also a guy where I wonder, can you switch with him as much as you'd like to? Right. Because he's not big enough to hold up against a lot of these guys. But I've liked his play. I'd like to see him more where the Lakers have more guys available so that he doesn't have to play in lineups with Russ and with Malik Monk, right? Where it's just like, oh, we've got two other dudes on the court who are your sized, right? He's been in lineups where he's literally the third ball handler.
Yeah.
And it's sort of just like, well, you're just a body out there. What I'd like to see more of is like, oh, can you get him in pick and rolls? Can you raise him up a notch in terms of his utility offensively?
Do you want to do that on a team, though, that has this many other ball handlers? Like, I can't think of too many possessions where I'm like, yo, let's start this play with Darren Collison with the ball in his hands, you know?
No, and that's why he is, to me, he's probably best suited for the Rondo role. Where it's just like, you're probably the emergency point guard.
Just to interject, though, that's also the issue with THT, is that how many possessions do you want to just give him when you've got LeBron or Russ out there and he's not doing the other utility, basically the 3-and-D, or or even how Pete put it earlier, with a dribble drive and like to a different extent D. But that's where this team is a little bit duplicative, and Collison kind of brings into that.
Can I talk about THT real quick,
please,
before we get back to Collison? There's a play in the first half where he was driving to the basket and he had one of his guards. So he's going right to his strong hand, and he had one of their guards on his hip. So he had already earned the advantage and was going to the basket. And the whole play, I'm watching him on the rewatch, the whole play, he's like looking for the kick pass. You're talking about this with Boston earlier, D, is if you're driving to the basket with the intention of passing, the defense will pick up on you're not creating an open shot.
You're doing it wrong.
You have to drive with the intention, with bad intentions on the rim. For like, Russ drives me crazy and drives a lot of people crazy with the layups and with the missed dunks. I just wish he would just finish. Like, he doesn't have to turn it over and go and cock it back for the throwdown. He's got the small hands. He can't palm the ball particularly well. Anyway, but he goes to the rim with bad intentions. And when you go to the basket in this drive and kick type of style, you have to be able to do that. You have to drive with the intention of, oh, I'm going to score if you don't rotate over. And so the THT's in this situation, and he's got this small guard on his hip. And I forgot who it was rotating over. I think it was Nwaba. But it was a situation where last year, in the exact same circumstance, THT just powers through, and that's an easy layup for him. Like, this is what he does. And there's a certain – we've talked about fit. And Mike's point is well taken. Like, do you really justify giving THT the ball to start the play? I think he's more of a secondary attack the closeout type of guy. And we'll talk about not shooting the three that the defense is giving you a little bit later when we talk about the scheme and ideas behind the team. But I see more right now a player that's having a crisis of confidence.
Yeah.
Where, like, if THT isn't taking that shot that I was describing, like, what is he doing? And so I see a guy who's really deeply in his head right now.
THT is probably a whole segment to an entire pod, even a full pod all on itself, because the sort of idea of playing in his head, and we've seen that with several sort of Laker youngsters who are going through those growing pains of how do I play on a team with real aspirations and stars next to me who demand the ball. And there's this inner monologue and calculus that young players who are looked at as like having real responsibility for a team's success that I think can be daunting for players. And it's much easier, honestly, I think, when you are a Malik Monk and it's sort of just like, bro, I got this. Like, I'm just going to go out there and do whatever the hell I do, and I'm just going to do it.
Malik is our spirit animal. Like, he's the guy he's a whole vibe unto himself.
Yeah.
And exactly what you're describing there, that mentality permeating the team. Russ talks about this a lot too, the idea of joy and playing open and free and all of that. And I think having the space to be able to do that is really helpful in getting there. And so, Malik, the Malik's just vibe, I think, is super important and informative to the rest of the team.
Let's stick on Malik just for 1 second then, because so he played 40 minutes. Part of that was because Reeves and Ariza specifically were out. But can Malik stay in a starting spot? So Wayne Ellington obviously also was out. How do you handicap which of those skill sets that you most want with that group? And I don't know. I find myself, if I had to answer the question in 1 second, I'd be like, start Malik. But then I think about it and I don't know, defensively, right? Like, I don't have the answer yet. I need us to sort of think about it collectively, but he's making kind of an increasing case, if not for a starting role in big minutes, at least sort of like the more featured sixth man than we've seen so far this year.
I'm not sure if Monk should start, but he should definitely be that guy who is a three-shift player and potentially a four-shift player. And there is a big difference when you come off the bench and you're guaranteed three shifts. That's just a different level of player that you're talking about. And he's one of the few guys who I think on the team should be guaranteed a third shift. I just think he should be guaranteed it. I think it should be baked into what his role is. The other guys who get three shifts are going to be AD, LeBron, Russ. And most starters get a third shift, but I'm talking about getting a third shift from a bench role. Monk is important. He is a bridge player similar to Reeves, but with a totally different skill set, because he is that secondary shot creator. He checks the boxes of I can handle the ball, check. I can create my own shot, check. I can spot up and shoot, check. And then I can make a play for someone else, check. Now, that one is much lower down on the list, but he checks all of those boxes, and he can be a three-level scorer. And so now his deficiencies are on defense. He's smaller and all of that stuff. But a player with his sort of skill set, that's pretty rare. And it's rare you're going to get that guy on a minimum contract. And it's rare that a guy who's on a minimum contract can credibly give you 40 minutes in an NBA game and make as many plays as
he was
Malik
a positive
made.
In 40 minutes.
Yes.
Most of the times when role players, their role gets overextended, there's a diminishing return to them to the point where they're a negative. There's, you know, that player at 18 minutes is a very different player than them at 35.
So let's bring it back to Collison here, right? Because I think we're all on the same page. I think Malik should play, right? And he should continue to play.
If I can make my point on Monk before we move on to Collison. Monk has the natural synergy that he has with this team, I think portends really well with Kendrick Nunn. This is part of the reason why I've been advocating for Kendrick Nunn to start since the beginning of the year. He's, I know, this very mysterious player to us because we saw him for like two or three games when it was the preseason and we weren't playing serious basketball or serious lineups or anything. But I watched a lot of Kendrick Nunn tape over this summer because I think he's a significant player. He's the only guy that we signed outside of the organization that is more than a minimum guy. THT was the only other guy that got more than a minimum. And so I've probably sounded like I think Kendrick Nunn is this great defender. And I don't think that. Kendrick Nunn is a speed guard that can operate in open space that is a hooper. He's that ball handling type of guy. He can beat guys one-on-one off of the dribble. He can really score. He's a three-level scorer. And if he's in space in lineups with Russ and LeBron and with other guys who Stanley Johnson, you start to run out of guys defensively that can guard someone else one-on-one. But I think that attribute of speed is especially important. Now, he isn't quite the bucket getter that Monk is, but he is a better defensive option than Monk is. And so it's these subtle turns of the dial when you need Monk has that great synergy, but probably isn't a starter because of his defensive issue, because of his defensive deficiencies. He's a classic off-the-bench scoring type of guard. You've got not a better version of him, but you've got a player that's waiting in the wings that fits his profile, that's better on defense than he is.
The only other thing I want to add about Malik, and by the way, we just got news as you guys were talking that, and people will know by the time the pod comes out, but Ellington is back in Memphis. Reeves and Bazemore both cleared protocols, but won't play
in
Memphis.
Go. Due to reconditioning. Basketball gods have been blessing us slowly but surely.
So it'll be basically everybody but Ariza back, and he was the last person to enter health and safety protocols for Friday's game.
Let's go.
So, but the one thing, to kind of finish this thought on Monk, Ellington, he does some things on defense a little bit differently, but I wouldn't say that he's, giving you that much more than Malik. And so what does Malik give you on offense more than what Wayne does? It's different because Wayne, you're going to run him around screens more. You could have Monk do that, but he's definitely not going to beat you off the dribble. He's not going to take it to the rim and go up with the right and finger roll with the left in. So I'm really curious to see how much what the minutes discrepancy is just even between Monk and Ellington in this Memphis game. And then that gets complicated further once Ariza and Reeves get back. And all of a sudden we're back into the too many cooks in the kitchen. And yes. Well, wait, how do we get minutes for Stanley Johnson? So that could be the next pod maybe as we try to figure out who's going to play out all these guys.
Well, just to close out this part of the conversation, and I think that this should be a bridge for a different pod and one where maybe people will have to listen to me talk a lot based off of my relationship in comparison to you two. But I'm a firm believer that the Lakers need to make a consolidation trade, that they need to start to choose who they believe are going to be the players who best fit their style of play, and that they need to sort of, if not force the coach's hand a little bit, basically make everyone needs to be on the same page. Like, these are the dudes who are going to play, these are the reasons why, and that's that. Because it's been great having all of these options, but at some point, you're going to have to probably choose between a Malik Monk and a Wayne Ellington. You're going to have to choose between a Stanley Johnson and a Dwight Howard or a DeAndre Jordan. You're going to have to choose between an Austin Reeves and, right? Like, there are choices here, and a playoff rotation is going to be 8 to 10 guys. Frank likes to play 10. Right. But in the closest of games, in the most important games, it's going to be 8 dudes. And so who are your 8 dudes? Who are the 8 dudes that you trust? And who are the 10 that I kind of trust, that I'm willing to turn to? And you can't have a team of 15 guys and say, yeah, we're going into battle with all of these guys. They're all going to be ready. They're all going to help us. That's coach speak. For I don't have my 8 guys.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And so there's a positive spin that you could put on everything. And I but like this positive spin.
But this whole first part of the season has been about finding who our guys are.
Yeah.
Imagine starting Bazemore and DJ right now.
Yeah.
Look, that's how we started the season. And I'm not trying to relitigate if is it a good idea or a bad one. It's just like the idea of those two starting now is so obvious that that's not the way to get to the best version of the team. And so the first part of the year is trial and error, Mike. And like, it's not a judgment. It's just like, that's what this first part of the year was going to be. Who are our guys?
Yeah. When they won the title though, right, they did kind of the same thing. And then in 1920 and then figured it out eventually. Right.
They had a different roster. We need to.
And played more than the usual, and played more than that kind of typical 8, right?
To be fair to Vike, it's easy to forget. Remember how many minutes Troy Daniels and Quinn Cook got?
Quinn Cook.
Mm-hmm. In the first month Dud's of the season, some, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
All those dudes were playing. And then suddenly
we were finding our guys then too. Yes. That's the purpose of the first half of an NBA season. And you got to stay attached enough in the standings. We did a pod on this yesterday in order for it to not go sideways. But this has happened all 3 years. We brought in Damian Jones around this time last season when Mark went out. Right. So anyhow, we're running long. This was a lot of fun. I hope everyone has enjoyed their stay on No Big Island. I think it's a one night stay. If not, Ja and company may do bad things to us. Shall see. We will be back tomorrow to cover that and a whole lot more here on the Laker Film Room podcast.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant. 16 rebounds, Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal! Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane, back for Gasol, pretty pass, and it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant, picked up by Bell.
There's the move, two, one,
miss it!
Bryant, unbelievable, for the victory, it's over.
Shot clock now to 5.
Bryant, yes! And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding?
kidding me.
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.